when there's something I have a lot of it and there's no pressure on me to do anything with that resource, you know, I get a wad of money, I just blow it, right? Instead of budgeting, and just like with money, I don't have so much in the bank. I'm going to be much more conscientious about how I use it, what I'm spending it on. We don't think of our natural resources typically in the same way.
The things that we do on our local sites have an impact not just to us, but to many other people.
I'm very passionate about the fact that woodland owners need options, and it can't be just about selling timber.
When you're putting out pollinator habitat, you're not just supporting pollinators. You're going to be supporting lots of different wildlife species.
As agriculture evolves and changes, are we, making sure that we are considering conserving our natural resources as well, and are we, planning on preserving those?
Welcome to Our Rich Land, a podcast of Richland Soil and Water Conservation District and Kingwood Center Gardens, where we explore what it means to improve, protect, and conserve our natural world.
Our aim and hope is to bring you stories and insight on conservation in our small corner of Ohio, that you would come away with a better understanding of and appreciation for our diverse and beautiful world.
My name is Evan Stern. I am a technician with Richland SWCD.
And he is way more than a technician, and I am just merely a Josh Steffen, executive director at Kingwood Center Gardens, located in Mansfield, Ohio. In today's episode, we talk about a permaculture principle. If you're not sure what a permaculture is, we get into that a little bit, of turning problems into solutions. The conversation was brought on by the bad storm of June 22 in Ohio. And if you lived in north central Ohio, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Straight line winds, baby. It knocked out all kinds of things for days.
Yep. This episode is also about shifting our perspectives from throwing unsustainable solutions at natural problems to coming up with more creative and holistic ones.
And so, that often the problem contains the solution.
Yep, exactly. So we'll get into a little bit about reductionism and holisticism. I'm not sure if that's an ism. Reductionist approach versus holistic approach, and how that relates to conservation and sustainability. So, we had a storm recently.
Yeah, it was pretty big.
And you guys were without power, right?
Yeah, I'm in Wayne County, south of the Ag Research Station, and in the Ohio State campus there. We were without power since like 2.5, 3 days. I don't know, whatever it was. It all blurred together into one sweaty long.
Yeah, during like the hottest part of the year
so far. Yeah, that was good. That was good timing.
We had a confirmed tornado in Knox County.
That's what I've heard.
Somewhere. I don't exactly know where, but it was somewhere. it's
that mysterious tornado. You know.
And actually, there was a confirmed tornado in Richland County as well.
It's a busy week. It's feast or famine. Let's show you. We have a confirmed tornado from Monday night that just came out. That damaged storm survey teams went down today to Richland and Ashland counties and determined an EF1 tornado touchdown there. 5.8-mile-long track near Newville, and then it traveled east and then twisted southeast into Mohican State Park there. 5.8 miles on the ground, 100 yards wide, extensive tree damage, and one little shed blown down. Thankfully, it was not a populated area.
A lot of people lost power. A lot of trees came down.
Yeah.
But your struggle with 2.5 days of power loss kind of sent you down a philosophical rabbit hole.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? I just was ranting and you wanted to make that into an episode. So the title of this episode is The Problem is the Solution, and which is a nice short cliche-sounding thing that I think it could apply is to a lot of conservation things and just as a life principle in general, but in more particularly to the circumstance where we were. So I'm out in the country. I am on well and septic, and but obviously we're still connected into the electrical grid.
Yeah.
But the immediate problem, of course, was getting some kind of energy source to keep some essential things going. So I have two sump pumps, one for internal water discharge and the second for drain tile around the foundation. Mm-hmm. And so we have no water. I just bought a generator. I didn't have a generator ready to go that could just plug right into the whole house grid to run the well and those kind of things. So yeah. We had no running water. So, oh boy.
Yeah.
you know, and I'm running, you know, my wife and I are running to our places of employment to, you know, or our in-laws to grab, fill up buckets and thermoses and all kinds of things to bring back water for different uses. And it made me realize, and then, one, how water wasteful, you know, I don't know how many gallons, I can't remember what's the average, you know, shower or toilet flush, you know, at least they've reduced the toilets now to what, 1.5 gallons per flush or something like that on average. Mm-hmm. Or it used to be like 2 or 3 gallons or something along those lines. So just the amount of water, and it's all potable water. Yeah. So this is the, you know, the best of the best that mm-hmm. we're using for what I would consider non-essential potable water functions. Mm-hmm. You know, why am I using drinking water to flush my toilet?
Yeah.
And so we have, so my immediate problem was water security. Mm-hmm. And I have the sump pump that I had hooked up to the generator because I didn't want my basement to flood. Mm-hmm. It's a really long story here. Stop falling asleep. And so I'm driving to work second day and I'm like, why am I spending all this money to get gas, which is really expensive right now, to run a generator to get rid of water when I am running to my place of employment to bring water back? For like, I have got a vegetable garden to water. I have all kinds of things that don't necessarily require drinking water to run.
Seems a little backwards.
It is, isn't it? And so I went, huh. So I unplugged the sump pump, let the water start to fill, started collecting the water in a 5-gallon bucket, had to draw it up and out, like go to old fashioned well. But I had water that I could then use for some other tasks. And, you know, or taking, and then I would take water, you know, I would take a very limited water bath, you know, with like a 0.5 gallon of water. Mm-hmm. And then I would plug the tub so that it couldn't run out. And I scooped that out and threw in the back of the toilet to flush the toilet. So I was getting two uses out of the same amount of water.
Yeah.
You know, so we just don't do that. We're like, you know, the consumer mindset of, you know, one and done. I get water in, I either drink it or I flush it or I shower with it and then it's back out. Mm-hmm. It has all kinds of issues.
Yeah.
And it's all great, you know, like we like to say, it's all fun and games until someone loses a spleen here, you know, or pokes their eye out. Well, when the eye gets poked out, now we're hurting. And we create this with our interconnectedness with all our technology and our systems. Well, the technology is great until it breaks down and or the supply chain to keep it going breaks down. There's all these different networks. And that if they're not functioning, you reach a critical mass at some point, things just so.
Yeah.
What it made me think of was the slogan, "The problem is the solution." And there's a lot in conservation that can help. It's a design, it's a phrase concept for helping you solve problems and design solutions to things. So in a garden, the old saying, you know, I don't have a snail problem. You have a duck deficiency.
Right.
You know, you don't have I have too much snow on my parking lot problem. You have, you know, a lack of freshwater storage you know, or whatever. It could be, you know, you have a problem that you're dealing with instead of trying to see things as it's a perception issue mm-hmm. and a mislabeling. Instead of seeing something as a problem I got to get rid of. Okay, I have water hitting my property. I have to get it off the property. I got to shunt it mm-hmm. as quickly as possible.
We deal with that all the time.
Do you? Right. Why do we have that mindset that we have to get rid of it or
store it or like,
or, you know, I can't have by code. I can't have water that comes out of my washing machine, dishwasher. That's gray water. It has to be by code connected to the black water pipe that then goes either into sewage if you're in the city or into your septic. Why?
I don't know.
because we see it as a problem rather than designing, you know, nature-based solutions that might be able to mitigate that water. And that water could go into a pond system on your property if you have the room.
Yeah.
You know, you're able to grow aquaculture, either you could have a nice, beautiful water feature and support some wildlife, or at the very least, or you could also be growing some crops on that potentially, you know, depending for all kinds of things. You know, like, for example, if you have a small livestock, you could be growing a floating plant material that like water lettuce and stuff, as long as you don't, it's an invasive, so make sure you don't let it escape. But then that becomes fodder for your goats or whatever.
So are you talking about like a settling pond, something where you can pump in gray water and sediment, and like what about, I mean, maybe moving to less toxic soaps and that would be,
well, that's, would be the best that's obviously situation. A part of it.
But what about the toxicity of having that in your water? How do you get rid of that? How do you reuse
well,
that?
If you're, so for, if you're using, Grant, I'm not an expert. This is why we have the show notes, by the way, where everything I just said will be corrected by Evan later in the editing process. So obviously starting with less toxic soaps going in.
Yeah.
But especially if you're using plant-based soaps, you know, or ingredients or animal product, or, you know, something that has a more organic nature to it, your plant material and the bacteria and all those things that are already there. And we use biosolutions in water treatment already.
Yeah.
Right? We rely on these bacteria cultures in settling ponds and so forth.
Biodigesters.
Yeah, to do their thing.
Yeah. All right, just taking a quick second to explain what biodigestion is. It is named for the breakdown of organic matter by bacteria in either an aerobic environment, which is where oxygen is present, or anaerobic, where oxygen is not present.
Smells good versus stinky.
Yep, exactly. So while aerobic digestion is commonly used to break down waste at municipal treatment plants, this is our disclaimer that we don't encourage you to direct your gray water to a pond if you have one without doing your own research. That was part of the episode. We were coming up with some ideas.
I probably rant on my soapbox that I wish we would change the legal code to allow for certain types of gray water, at least domestic, to be properly channeled to properly constructed wetlands type yep. environments.
Yep. Yeah.
It would ease our infrastructure a little.
Right. But this isn't us encouraging you to just dump your gray water.
No, don't do it. Don't listen to professionals, folks.
Definitely dumping any wastewater of any kind into rivers or streams is not allowed, so we just want to be clear on that.
Yes, that's probably a good plan.
So, you could do other, so the concept is sort of already there, but even those settling ponds, they still require, like our wastewater treatment plants require a lot of electrical energy to run them. That seems like a security threat right there. When using, you know, the power of wetlands and river systems in miniature in your yard that require zero energy, they just do, well, there is some maintenance to it, but a whole lot less.
Yeah.
So whether these are a solution, again, there's no one size fits all, But again, these are principles that should provoke you to at least think about your situation. And it caused me to think about my situation and see a problem, get rid of water that could go into my basement, into a solution. Oh man, I gotta water my vegetables on a hot day and I don't have, my hose isn't working.
Yeah.
So that's where that whole rant was going. But on the global level, we have had this reductionistic thinking that comes from centuries of scientific progress, has led to all kinds of great things that have been good for us. But when applied to some areas, reductionistic thinking does not, it has its limits, just like all forms and tools. Mm-hmm. They have a limited range, whereas systems thinking and holistic thinking and iterative processes can have, they have their advantages also.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the whole is greater than some of the parts. There's an effect that happens when you put all the parts together that you cannot see or study in isolation, which is required for the scientific process to really operate well. If you're in urban planning, the same thing. It's the same mindset that applies to that. We used to urban or a modern urban planning of, I don't know, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, somewhere in there. Again, I'm not an expert, but on the history of it. But we would separate all of these different community functions, commercial, agriculture. Residential, people have to have a place to live, people have to place of work, people have to have a place to play, all those things. And we would separate them out into different parts of the cityscape and then connect it all with roads. Well, it's no different than a global economy where, you have this part of the world really provides this for the rest of the world. This part of the world provides this for the rest of the world. And then you connect it all with shipping and trains and, all kinds of logistics, all fueled by fossil fuels. Well, that works great. Fossil fuels have been a very cheap economic way of getting things out there. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't deride that. However, there are other consequences, not only for potentially for climate change, but when there's an abundant resource in nature, there's a sudden massive activity to take advantage of that energy source until it's gone. And then things kind of go back, right? There's a carcass.
Yeah.
All the animals go la, 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 and then subside. It's the same. It's a great picture.
How did that go again?
Yeah, la, 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 la. What happens when the fossil fuels no longer are temporarily are not available? For whatever politically reasons, economic reasons, whatever the reason is, suddenly all those separate systems are now, that the things that connected them that made it work are now isolated and there's no way to make them function smoothly. It's called security risk.
Yeah.
When we go to such a level of globalization rather than maybe a balance of localization and globalization together. If you have too much globalization, it's called 2021 and 22. that's what that's called, right?
We're so seeing the chink in the armor,
right,
of global supply chains has come to the forefront
right
recently,
and now suddenly we're feeling, rather than maybe looking more locally, like to my sump pump for a solution to my, and come up with the solution myself.
Yeah.
So the problem is the solution. There you go.
Hey everybody, we are taking a quick break to tell you about our organizations, but first, I want to say that Our Rich Land is now a year old.
Woo!
It's wonderful!
It's beautiful!
But we have more episodes on the way for you, so stay tuned. We both juggle a lot of different duties, so this podcast is released as we are able to find time. That being said, thanks for being a dedicated listener anyway, despite our sporadicness.
Thanks, Mom. If you enjoy our rich land and want to support us and the work that we and all the incredible charitable work that we do on this podcast, the best way to do that is to share our program with a friend. Also, we encourage you to subscribe to this show however you get your podcast. I'm sure that app has some kind of notification feature thing. I can't talk. Has some kind of feature thing that allows you to hit notifications, get new episodes. Or, I'm not sure how that's an or. We'd also like you to hit like or whatever thumbs up thing or whatever your podcast. Their mechanism for letting podcast creators like ourselves know that you like our program. We would love your feedback. We won't use any of it, but we would love to have your feedback.
Also, well, I at least I would like some feedback. Also, if you have any ideas for this program or have an idea for a guest for the podcast or want to be a guest yourself.
You want to become famous.
please get in contact with one of us. We'd love to hear from our listeners.
Thanks, Mom.
Richland Soil and Water Conservation District is a government agency that provides education and technical assistance to Richland County's residents with their natural resource needs. We wear many hats and provide an abundance of services, including regulating our county's stormwater, managing the MS4 Municipal Stormwater Pollution Permit, providing conservation opportunities to farmers, offering educational workshops on a variety of backyard conservation topics, and much more. Our goal as an agency is to be a resource for conservation needs, and if we can't answer your questions, to pass you on to experts who can. In relation to this episode, information about rain barrels, rain gardens, pond installation and management, and native plant and tree sales may be of interest to you, especially if you're considering creating more natural and sustainable habitat on your property. If you are interested in sustainable and conservation agriculture, we have a plethora of resources and connections for you to explore that. As well, I also want to note that we are in our 75th year.
So. Well.
Well, what?
We're in our 69th. And Kingwood Center Gardens is renowned for its distinctive floral displays with unique plant specimens and its variety of garden experiences from our woodland areas to our nature pond to our greenhouses and more kind of more formal gardens, rose gardens and so forth. And our beloved duck pond and ducks, feeding the ducks and our peacocks and all that good stuff. It's a great place to experience not only the natural side of things and the more formal garden side, but to come for great public events, private rentals, public events like our Great Pumpkin Glow in October, and which Evan loves a whole bunch. And our fun. Christmas at Kingwood, and of course, Run of the Winter. We also have a great garden shop where we sell a lot of unique plants and gifts. It's a great place to come and on our 47 acres, unwind and relax. We still remain committed to Mr. King's legacy and furthering his vision of creating transformative, positive guest experiences where they form deep connections to the natural world.
I read this to you off the air. The end of this little article that was talking about the problem is the solution. The problem is the solution is an amazing tool that can be used in all areas of life, not just with land and food systems. It is key to recognize that very few things we call problems are negative or evil, quote unquote, by their own merits. They are neutral. They just are.
Mm-hmm.
But they pose a problem to us. So that's part of it is the me-centric world. It's a problem because it's a problem to me.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't bother my neighbor or it doesn't bother the deer in the woods, but it's a problem, you know, to us and our ideas and our ideals. So if we try to see how that item or element or energy, that resource, that problem is actually a resource, it's a treasure. Mm-hmm. can be harnessed as a resource, and I'm reading it again, then we will be more productive, more sustainable, and significantly less stressed in our life today. I don't have a weed problem. I have a soil compaction issue, or I have a nutrient imbalance issue, or I don't have a weed problem. I have a nitrogen source for my compost pile solution.
Yeah.
For example.
Or I don't have a stormwater problem for my large factory building that I have to put into a drainage control basin.
No, I have a cooling water resource for my plant.
Or I have irrigation for the landscape around.
Right. Yeah. See, I mean, it's or I don't have a grass clipping. I don't have a curb bill for waste. You know, yard waste pickup problem. I have a nitrogen solution for my, you know, and mulch solution for my vegetable garden solution.
Right.
So it's again, it's mindset. The slogan just helps to think, make me stop and think and go, I think this is a real problem. Maybe it's not. Maybe this is a resource. So like with water, we do this with money, or at least some of us do, and I'm not one of them, apparently. We budget. We know we have only so much money coming in.
Yeah.
We do a budget out, and we try to stick to that so that we have enough money. Why does Josh not sit down with his wife Janelle and do a water budget? How much do I really need to take a shower, to flush the toilet, to, you know, drink, to water, whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with the rain gardens that we talked about in the other episode, where it's like, okay, what size storm event do you want to plan for?
Mm-hmm.
And then you size your in system a little, maybe a little bigger than that. It was the same thing. So you try to save and store that much in your water bank, whether it's a cistern in tree, whatever method you want to store the water, and that it's available. You don't have to pay a water bill.
Yeah.
To have it, you know, brought to you.
Mm-hmm.
The water's already coming to you. It's called rain. It's called groundwater, right?
Yeah.
It's already there. And so anyway, it's those kinds of things that would be a lot less stressful. And a lot of the stress comes because we've created systems that require so much maintenance. Even with composting, we spend so much effort gathering material to take it to a pile to process it to then put back on the yard. Even if you're just doing it at your own yard, I mean, it's even more ridiculous when we have it hauled to the curb, pay someone else to take it, process it, and bring it back to us. That we then go to the store and buy, either in bulk or in bag,
mm-hmm.
at a premium.
Yeah.
You know. But the more you are able to compost in place, chop and drop and other, you know, and chop and drop is what we would call mulch mowing in the bed, in a flower bed.
Yeah.
You know, and you're letting material, like nature does, it takes care of it right there. So you have a yard waste problem that now becomes a fertilizer and organic solution.
Mm-hmm.
So if you would plant, you know, more of a perennial meadow or whatever, root systems that penetrate into the ground further, your runoff problem becomes a free irrigation solution, it's more likely to percolate quicker down through because the roots are breaking it up. I mean, sod grass, turf grass just does not do it.
Yeah.
You know, it goes about 3 to 4, however high you're mowing, that's how much root zone is below. So if you're cutting it 2 inches, you got 2 inches of root. If you cut it, that's why the taller you mow, the longer the root system, the less you're going to have to water, because the root systems go deeper. They're able to draw from a bigger area.
Yeah.
So if you're having, if you're paying a lot for your water bill, for irrigation, mow higher. So anyway, but all of there, I mean, there's all kinds of, even, I mean, a lot of places in the other parts of the world, they have cisterns on their roof to collect the water.
Mm-hmm.
or they have, you know, they'll collect it here down below, and then they have a small pump to pump it up to the, you know, there are ways. You just have to start thinking outside the box.
Yeah, because their resource scarcity is very much real, or, you know,
why we haven't done it here.
Right. Or they don't have the convenience of a whole system of sewage waste and
right.
and water lines.
Right.
So, you know, they got to get it when it comes. So.
So, I mean, they're you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are solutions that others have come up with, or you can adapt to help with, you know, some of these things.
Right.
But for us, it's until that disaster strikes like we had, it's totally off of my mind, except for my guilty conscience, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And until you realize the necessity, I'm like water. I'm going to take the easiest path of least resistance, you know?
Hello, everyone. It's Evan. And to wrap up this episode, I want to address a very thought-provoking question that one of our podcast reviewers brought up. And it gets at the heart of the topic we talked about today. Now, her question to me was this: why should we be conserving resources that are abundant? And it caused me to pause and ask myself the question, why am I doing what I'm doing? What's the use of advocating for the protection and enhancement of natural resources when they appear to be plentiful all around us? At least most of our resources here in Ohio don't seem to be running low anytime soon, so what's the big deal? Well, for one, it's probably safe to assume that farmers in the 1930s, as they plowed up the Great Plains, had similar thoughts. Here is all this prime farmland for us to use, so let's get planting. Also, the common belief at the time was that plowing fields would bring rain, and the plains were experiencing a drought, so they plowed to their heart's content. But all this ended pretty poorly, if you know the story of the Dust Bowl. The soil of the Great Plains, a once abundant resource, vanished without any attention to its stewardship. Drought and wind dried up the plowed topsoil and blew it away in huge dust storms, and it takes hundreds of years to properly develop new topsoil. Sometimes I turn on a tap for a glass of water and marvel at how many times in my life I have done the same thing, and I've gotten clean, drinkable water every time. I haven't grown up in scarcity at all, so I don't really know what it's like. But I think the Dust Bowl goes to show that what is perceived as an abundant resource does have its limits. They just aren't apparent right away. To talk about a modern example, let's go back to water here. So roughly 97% of Earth's water is salty ocean water. The other 3% is fresh water, but only a third of that, 1% of Earth's total water, is available for human consumption. And it is true, water is recycled, so the Earth doesn't really lose water. But there are ways that we can make available fresh water unavailable or harder to use. Think of Lake Erie, for example, and its toxic algal blooms, or Flint, Michigan, and their problems with lead pipes. Sure, we don't have the more obvious water resource concerns than the droughts out west, but perhaps our greatest water resource challenge in the east is keeping our fresh water clean and readily usable. Clean water, of course, not only benefits humanity, but the environment as a whole. So protecting abundant resources isn't a waste of time. It's actually an investment in the future to make sure that these resources stay abundant and available to us and future generations.
Our Rich Land is a production of Richland Soil and Water Conservation District and Kingwind Center Gardens.
To dive more into today's topic, visit the nerd section. Really? Did you call it that?
Yeah, we're calling it the nerd section now.
That's what I describe. Okay, what am I describing here? The nerd section, if you're not sure what that is, it's the section for the five people who are listening to this podcast, okay? Thanks, Mom. Asked Josh briefly to explain permaculture. Oh my goodness. Permaculture is a nice synthesized single word that comes from two words, permanent agriculture. It's a word that arose from a Australian by the name of Bill Mollison in the 20th century. That was a few centuries ago, apparently. It's funny to say 20th century now, like it's like so long ago. He coined the phrase when he was looking at how, especially in an age when our carbon-based economy might come to an end, and how would we sustain our the planet and our and human culture into the future with the unsustainable carbon heavy based annual agriculture that we've been practicing for thousands of years. But especially since, you know, the 1950s and post World War II agriculture innovations. Mm-hmm. The problem is the solution is one of Bill Mollison's key permaculture design principles or slogans. You can learn more about permaculture by reading his book. You can also, if you go to the website, if you just Google permaculture design principles, it'll pop up. Not his website, but a great website that I use repeatedly that breaks all these 12 design principles down.
Gotcha.
Or by picking up the book that Josh mentioned. Yes, and we've answered that part. It's a book.
Yep. As always, our website is available, and it is a new version. So if you are a frequenter of our website, you'll find that it is brand spanking new. And you can navigate from there to different resources I discussed during the break. All of these links will be down in the show notes, which we lovingly call the nerd section, where you can go to discover more about what we talked about. And then how can people find Kingwind's website?
Hey, well, they can go with this thing called the internet. It's really kind of cool, y'all. Kingwind Center Gardens has a website, just like everybody else. If you want to learn more about Kingwind Center Gardens, you can find us all on the internet at kingwindcenter.org. That's KINGWOOD Center. If you can't spell that, I'm not helping you. .org.
And we have a few references to make. So Josh quotes an article in the episode several times that is from the blog Temperature, Climate, Permaculture by John Kitzsteiner. And the article is entitled The Problem is the Solution, It Ain't Zen. Also, we want to give special thanks to News 5 Cleveland, who generously allowed us to use the audio from a broadcast of the tornado in Richland County in 2022. Speaking in it was their chief meteorologist, Mark Johnson, and they requested that a link be made available to the broadcast, so you can find that link in our show notes if you want the full story. Additionally, you can find a link to Richland SWCD's residential programs page, where you can find resources for rain barrels, rain gardens, native plants, backyard conservation, and more. And that's a wrap, folks.
Phew.